cinema ahead. They were almost at their destination. By the light of the moon, she could just make out the film advertised on the billboards. It was Dead End, with Humphrey Bogart and Sylvia Sidney. She wouldn't mind seeing that if she could afford it. A job for herself was first on the agenda, and Rainey needed to return to a school as soon as possible. She'd been doing well at Portsmouth Academy, where she'd excelled at typing and shorthand, but leaving Portsmouth meant that she hadn't completed the course. "Not much further," Jo said, but she might as well not have bothered because Rainey couldn't possibly hear her. She was giving full voice to the biggest aspidistra in the world, her rendition just as hearty as Gracie Field's version. Jo smiled. It made her heart happy to hear her daughter singing. And then, ahead, off Fortin Road, was Albert Street. Jo gave a hand signal and turned right into the terraced street.
"Which one is it?"
"Number 14, the one with the wide shed."
"Thank God we're here."
Jo pulled up outside the front door that would open straight onto the pavement. Within moments, she had the key in the lock but allowed Rainey to enter first.
"Don't put any lights on," she warned. "Remember the blackout? I don't think there are curtains at the windows. Let's just take everything inside the house so I can put the car away from prying eyes."
"Mum, stop worrying. There's nobody about. It's as quiet as the grave."
Rainey was right. The little street that led down to the railway footbridge and goods yard was deserted, but Jo knew she wouldn't begin to feel safe until the car was locked away and she and her daughter were inside the house with the door shut.
"It smells a bit funny in here," Rainey said,
dumping the brown carrier bag that had been on her lap the entire journey.
"It's only a bit of damp, don't worry about it."
Jo put down an armful of rolled-up blankets on a broken chair. She fished out a torch from her coat pocket and gave a quick flick of light around the place.
It was even more dismal than she'd remembered.
She tried to imagine the small, dank room with bright rugs, covering the second-hand furniture she would buy when she could.
"We'll soon make it nice and homely," she said,
trying to reassure herself as well as Rainey.
Rainey gave a big yawn, then shivered. Jo said, "I'm tired and cold as well. Come on. The sooner we get the stuff indoors, the sooner we can have some cocoa from the flask and set about making up a bed for the night."
She hadn't told Rainey they'd have to sleep on the floor. She didn't want to think about mice or creepy crawlies. Soon, everything they'd brought with them was piled in the living room, and Jo had cleared a space in the shed for the car. When she got back into the house, she discovered Rainey had hooked a blanket over the front window, found the candles, lit one, and was making a nest of bedding on the bare boards.
"I had to look upstairs, Mum. There's a mattress on the floor in the back bedroom, but I didn't want to risk it. It might be full of fleas."
Rainey made a face.
"I'm so cold, even the candle seems to give out heat," she said. "I'm not getting undressed. It's freezing."
Jo put her arms around her daughter. Tears burned the backs of her eyes.
"I'm sorry I've taken you away from a nice home and brought you here."
She didn't get any further as Rainey cuddled into her.
"I wanted to leave as well. Don't you ever forget that. If we hadn't got away tonight, sooner or later he'd have killed you. And I need my mum."
Chapter 2 Corporal Alfie Bird didn't want to leave the Royal Army Ordnance Corps barracks in Hilsey to fight in France. He hadn't wanted to return home on a 48-hour pass to find his wife and daughter gone, either. All he'd done was push Jo about a bit for shooting her mouth off about him and Janice. Jo knew how upset he got when she tried to best him in an argument. It was her own fault. He sniffed and wiped a hand across his red moustache, remembering,
"I saw you this afternoon, walking arm in arm with Janice Woolbetter in Elm Grove."
She'd come straight out with it. No messing about.
"Oh yeah? Would that be while I was overseeing weapon repairs in the stores all day in barracks?"
She'd ignored his lie.
"I was on the bus. She was laughing up at you in the rain."
"You're mistaken. It wasn't me."
"You promised me it was over between you and her."
He'd begun to lose his temper, but he'd kept it in check long enough to say,
"If it was raining, I doubt you could tell who was with the bloody woman."
"I recognised you,"
Jo insisted. He tried to sweet-talk her then,